The United Nations Human Rights Chief recently called the human rights violations in Haiti catastrophic. The planned presidential and legislative elections have once again been delayed. And Canada, with 100 RCMP officers in Haiti to train the very police accused of many of the acts of violence and murder, is no innocent onlooker. Kevin Pina is a journalist, a filmmaker. He lives in Haiti, and we spoke with him on his last speaking tour across Canada, and now he has returned again to premiere last night his new film, and that film is called Haiti, The Untold Story, and Kevin joins me in the studios. Congratulations on getting the film finished.
Thank you.
I want to start with the United Nations. So the human rights chief of the United Nations has said the human rights situation in Haiti is catastrophic. Elaborate. What does the report
cover? I mean, I'm really grateful that Thierry Fagart, who is the head of the human rights mission for the United Nations in Haiti, acknowledged that the human rights situation is catastrophic. However, what he didn't acknowledge was that it's not just that the Haitian police have been summarily executing people in poor neighborhoods, where there's a continued call and demonstrations mounted calling for the return of Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who was the president who was ousted February 29, 2004, or that the Haitian National Police have fired on unarmed demonstrators several times, even after killing them, planting guns, going as far as to plant guns on the corpses to justify having slaughtered unarmed demonstrators. Or that there are thousands of political prisoners in Haiti today because of their political affiliations and political beliefs, political affiliations with Lavalas, Jean-Bertrand Aristide's political party. But what he did not acknowledge is that all of this has been overseen by the United Nations itself, and that the United Nations itself has been implicated in the shooting deaths of unarmed civilians in one of the major poor slums where Aristide's support remains greatest, Cité Soleil, on July the 6th of this year.
So that's what struck me. The United Nations has a major role in Haiti, a major role in the overthrow of Aristide and the implementation of putting in a new government friendly to the powers that want to overthrow Aristide, including Canada. And yet the other arm of the United Nations is saying, oh, we're not doing such a good job. Is that a reflection of a conflict, or is this trying to, just as your first answer sort of indicated, just pass the buck down the line and see the United Nations is not responsible for this? The Haitians are responsible for this.
I think it's cover-up. I think that the United Nations is well aware, and I've spoken with people, even in the Canadian contingent, who are very conscious of the fact that their commanders have been turning a blind eye to human rights violations by the Haitian police and have been stalling promised investigations into the United Nations' direct role in killing unarmed civilians. But you've got to remember that these people, when they go to work with the United Nations, they're under contract. They cannot speak publicly. Many of them would like to come forward and would like to condemn this. Ultimately, it's cover-up, and cover-up for a good reason. Why is the United Nations going to investigate its own direct involvement in human rights violations in Haiti when they need their credibility and reputation, when they put their credibility and reputation behind these upcoming sham elections? They don't want to damage their own reputation and credibility just before these elections. They need that to resonate over into that process. So they're not going to start seriously investigating themselves. Thierry Fagart, when he says that, actually, he's deflecting. He's deflecting UN culpability, UN responsibility in human rights violations in Haiti.
So you mentioned the elections. We're getting a scenario, something like we've been seeing in Iraq, you know, sort of we're trying to install, we being Canada, the United States, France, are trying to install a government that will follow their interests, their project, and they're having some obviously considerable difficulty in getting something that can have the stability they want and have credibility with the Haitian people. So the election is designed to try and quote-unquote legitimate. But now the elections are being postponed. What signal do you take from this constant juggling with the date of the election.
Well, they're in disarray because they're trying to make it look as credible a process as possible. But how can you consider these elections credible when it has literally been paved, the vote has been literally paved, with the blood of thousands upon thousands of Haitians who've been killed since the bloody coup on February 29, 2004? How can you call these elections credible when the leadership of Lavalas, the majority political party, are either dead from that campaign of extermination, in jail, or in internal exile, or external exile? That has what has been the actual preparation for these upcoming elections. That's what these massive human rights abuses have been about. Because, imagine, the U.S., France, and Canada, and then the United Nations, told us that Aristide had lost the support of his own people, and that was what justified ousting him from power. Now, every time those people mount demonstrations in tens of thousands in the capital demanding his return, what does that say about their rationale and justification for the coup? It embarrasses them. It says that they were lying. As well as if Lavalas were able to actually participate in these upcoming elections in a fair and level playing field, they would win again. What would that say about their argument that Aristide was a wannabe dictator who had lost the support of his people if Lavalas were to return to power again? It would expose it for the lie it really is. And that's why they have had to perform the systematic campaign of extermination against that majority political party. One, because every time they hit the streets, it shows that that was a big lie, it exposes it. And two, because if they didn't exterminate it and they were able to participate in the elections, they would win again.
So are they trying to also get some people who have had Lavalas affiliations, who have had a credibility within the Lavalas party and movement, to say, well, we will participate in the elections, knowing that they may not be given the victory, but they would serve as a front? In other words, have they been working and had any success in getting that kind of collaboration? Is that what they're waiting for their election?
Well, absolutely. And there have been some breakaway elements that they have bought and have broken away, like Leslie Voltaire, who was a former minister of the 10th Department under Aristide. He and Woody Elivaux, who was a former senator in the Lavalas-controlled parliament, unilaterally announced. You've got to remember, these people have no base of support. But they unilaterally announced that Lavalas was now endorsing Marc Bazin for the presidency. Marc Bazin, of course, is a former World Bank official who ran against Aristide in the 1990 elections. The idea that Lavalas would now endorse Marc Bazin as a presidential candidate is ludicrous. But these guys obviously went through with this in order to add some veneer of legitimacy to this process. René Préval, who was the president, Lavalas elected president, elected in 1997, he has also entered the race. But at the end of the day, based upon my having lived through the last 6 years, having covered Haiti since 1989, what's abundantly clear to me is that the candidate that will win these elections is the candidate that my embassy will be most comfortable with is the next.
You mean Washington?
Washington, D.C., the U.S. Embassy. And they've structurally ensured that that's so. Préval and Bazin, I don't care who's running, they've structurally already put the fix in. And what is the fix? In November, there were 12,000 polling places. But these elections are only planning between 600 to 800 polling places. So whereas having that much fewer polling places may ensure them those wonderful photo opportunities of long lines at the poll in Haiti, it's not going to ensure universal voting, and it's not going to ensure that the majority of the population are not going to be disenfranchised from this process. Because when you diminish the number of polling stations from 12,000 to, let's give them the benefit of the doubt, 800, who does that disenfranchise? It disenfranchises the small peasant farmers who are the majority of the population, who live in the countryside. That's 70% of the population of Haiti. Why does it disenfranchise them? We've looked at their proposed map where they're going to put these fewer polling places, and we've estimated that the average small peasant farmer, who's the majority of the population again, will have to get up at 4 in the morning, walk 5 hours to a polling station, waste 1 to 2 hours in line, and then walk back home 5 hours, losing an entire day working in his field and feeding his family. We just don't see it happening. Mm-hmm. So that is structurally meant to disenfranchise what was the major base of support for Lavalas, which was the small peasants in the countryside. So the structural fix is in, Mordecai. By any stretch of the imagination, by any balanced barometer, by any fair litmus test, there's no way that these elections are going to solve the fundamental problems in Haiti.
So Canada's appointed a Haitian woman, Haitian-Canadian, yeah, as Governor General. No one ever asked her in Canada about her views on Haiti. They've asked her about her French citizenship and her views on Quebec independence. That aside, Canada continues to train police. What updates can you give us on Canada's role specifically in Haiti?
Canada's up to its neck in this whole process. The RCMP, of course, has been training the Haitian National Police this entire period while they've been committing these gross human rights violations. So on one hand, the Martin administration, or can I call it the Martin regime?
You use your vocabulary.
The regime of Paul Martin pats itself on the back and says, geez, we're training the Haitian police. Look what a wonderful job we're doing. We're helping to restore democracy to Haiti. But when the Haitian police commit these massacres, when the Haitian police shoot at unarmed demonstrators, the Martin regime, along with the United Nations, washes their hands of any responsibility and culpability and says, that's not us. So they want it both ways. On one hand, they want to take credit and tout that to the Canadian people that we're doing our part in this coalition by training the police. But when the police commit gross human rights violations, they wash their hands of any culpability or responsibility. The same with the judicial reform. Right, Haiti has one of the most politicized judiciaries in the history of the country. By politicized, what I mean is it's being used as a tool of vendetta, as a tool of persecution against the majority political party, against Lavalas, hence the thousands of political prisoners, if you don't count just the capital, but the provinces as well in the countryside. So you've got Paul Martin saying there are no political prisoners in Haiti. And yet you've got Father Gerard Jean-Just, who has been arrested, he's been incarcerated now for 2 months without any formal charges, deemed a prisoner of political conscience by Amnesty International. And so you've got all these political prisoners. The Canadian government says, we're using CETA money to reform the judiciary in Haiti. The Canadian International Development Agency is working to reform the judiciary in Haiti. But when you raise the question of all the political prisoners, again, they wash their hands and say, but that's not us. You know, we're not culpable. We're not responsible. So there's this game playing going on where on one hand, they're touting their role as building democracy in Haiti. But when you call them on what it actually means on the ground, they then back off and say, but that's not us. We are not really responsible for what's going on in Haiti. You know, the electoral code, CETA helped to, there are technicians running all over Haiti right now who are paid by CETA, by the Canadian International Development Agency. They are involved in just about every facet and aspect, from training the police to reforming the judiciary to having rewritten the electoral law in Haiti.
You were just recently on CBC. I'm wondering if you've noticed, either in that interview or on any other observations you have of the Canadian media, any greater accuracy in their approach towards events in Haiti, or does it remain fairly consistent of giving the government, Canadian government, lying?
Mostly it's the alternative press. in Canada, such as Co-op Radio, such as your program, such as Charles Boylan's program, the Montreal Mirror. We did have one success, people tell me, but I don't know your press as well as you do, in the Montreal Gazette, where it was sort of unheard of, where they had finally acknowledged that it was a coup and referred to the ousting of Aristide as a coup. So there have been a few successes, as it happens, as you mentioned, but primarily it's been the alternative media in Canada that has really kept on this story, that has really tried their best to keep the Canadian public informed about what Canada's role is in Haiti. I think that if they could just gloss it over, if they could just forget about it, most of the mainstream press will. And that is the role of a true independent and alternative press, is to keep informing the public in order to put the pressure on those guys who are in bed with the Martin administration. You understand, these publishers and these owners can get a call from the foreign ministry anytime. You know, they're golfing buddies. You know, they eat together in restaurants. They go to the same cocktail parties. We, like you, myself, alternative radio, we don't do that. We're sort of out of those circles of power. But that's appropriate. That's our role. And that's why Mordecai, I don't want to seem opportunistic, but I do want to take this opportunity to encourage listeners to support Co-op Radio and to support programs such as Red Eye, because this is your alternative.
And let me just ask you one brief question to finish. I said I was going to come back to your film. Tell us, what was the timeline focus of this film that you've released, and how could people get a hold of it?
Well, it's not going to be available after Canada. I tour the United States with it, then I tour Europe with it, then I'm going to the Caribbean, and then I'm supposed to go to South Africa. Once that tour is completed, which is probably going to be about 2 months, then I'm finally going to release it on DVD. However, I have been seeding all of the Canadian Haiti Action Network with copies of it, and there will be subsequent screenings where I won't be present, but there will be members of those committees who will be talking about Haiti, who will be showing the film again, and the committee here in Vancouver has a copy, and they'll be doing that, I think, within the next month.
Terrific. Thanks for coming in, Kevin.
My
and
pleasure.
Good luck on the rest of your journey.
All right. Keep this radio station alive.
Will do.